Questions, BNQ. Welcome to episode 15. Tonight we're delving back into the world of gaming, but unlike the last time where it was only on two franchises, Pokemon and the Elder Scrolls, tonight we have a panel of five big experts who are going to bring to you the best stories in all of video gaming. And we've got some great gems for you, but before we can get going any further, Matt, we have a sponsor tonight, don't we?
As a matter of fact, we do, Josh. Tonight's episode is brought to you by spoilers. Spoilers. Basically this whole episode.
This is the best episode for spoilers to sponsor. Well, thank you very much for obtaining them as our sponsor. I hear that their new club is very hot. It's called Alert. And it's already starting, folks. So let me introduce tonight's panel. We have joining us, you already know him, you love him, it's Matt.
Yep.
Joining us as well, we have Rachel.
Hello.
We have Josh P.
Dun, dun, dun.
And welcome back, Ed.
Hello, everyone.
So, and of course, you know me. You don't love me, but you know me. I'm Josh, the captain of this industry ship. And I do have some interesting and fun announcements for BNQ since we've recorded our last episode. First of all, thank you to the over 1,200 followers we have on Twitter. I know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
We have also crossed over 2,000 feed hits in BNQ history, so round of applause. Woohoo! To all of our listeners. And I have another big announcement. We are part of our first ever podcast network. We are now a part of the Tangent Bound Network. It is a group of awesomely cool podcasts of all different kinds of subjects, and they promote your podcasts for free on their website. The link will be in the show notes for this episode. So we really appreciate Tangent Bound letting us become a part of their network. We are very lucky to be a part of such a amazing family, and please check out all the other Tangent Bound productions. They are on topics as far ranging as Doctor Who, the news, sports, you name it, you'll find it on this network. So awesome that we are there, and we couldn't have done it without all of your support, listeners, so we thank you very much. I do have to say, though, one more thing, listeners, would you kindly go to iTunes and fill in a review for us if you listen to us through that means. A 5-star review is how we get attention on iTunes, and if we can get enough reviews to actually have them display, then we have a chance of being picked as an editor's pick on iTunes as well as on other platforms. So we really appreciate that. Like I said, would you kindly please do that? And if you heard my phrase in there, you probably know one of the games that I'm going to be proposing in just a few minutes. So we're going to go ahead and
spoiler.
Yeah, jump in, and as Matt said, our sponsor tonight is spoilers, because we're going to be spoiling the hell out of the games that we're going to be talking about in this episode. And Matt has been so gracious to bring a game recommendation to the episode, which is only appropriate. Matt, what is it?
Well, I decided that I should do something at the height of irony while still being somehow appropriate. So I've selected a game that literally does not have a story. Space Engineers. It is available on Steam. It might be available on other platforms, but it doesn't matter because seriously, just play it on Steam, weirdo. It is a game where you design and build ships and bases as an engineer in space. You can play in survival mode or creative mode, and there are NPCs that you can kill if you so choose. And you build stuff, and then you keep building stuff. Currently, I'm working on a capital ship large enough that I think I may have broken the mechanics of the game.
That's fantastic. So
that sounds like the Matt I know.
I would say it's Minecraft meets X-Plane in space.
Done. Sold. Well, of course, as always, we'll have a link in the show notes to the Steam page for our game recommendation, which is Space Engineers. No story, but still worth playing. Kind of like other games that we love, but tonight we're focusing on the story. So thank you very much, Matt, for that recommendation. And now we're going to jump into the stories, and the games that we're going to be talking about, we're going to be spoiling the hell out of tonight, so please check out the show notes to make sure you're not playing one of them right now or plan to play one of them in the near future. We're not going to say them right now. We don't want to blow the surprise if you want to be surprised, but please read the show notes to make sure you're not about to be spoiled and lose 40 hours of your life or more on an endeavor that we're going to ruin for you. That being said, Ed, I believe you have the first candidate.
The series I went with, and it's a total of four games, is the Uncharted series by Naughty Dog on the PlayStation systems through PS3 and PS4. You know, to me as a kid, one of the biggest influences in, like, media in at all was Indiana Jones. Fantastic trilogy, and I say trilogy because there was only three movies, but the Uncharted series spans four games, and they're all good. It takes the premise, and you know, this has been done before. Tomb Raider's been around for over, 20 years now? And, you know, they did the tomb exploring stuff first, but to me, Uncharted got it right first. It takes a basic premise, gives you a very generic-looking hero, Nathan Drake, and it makes him funny as hell, and it tells each story a good wrap-up story. It feels like you're playing a movie. That was the first game I'd ever played where it felt like you were playing a movie, that you had control over the action. I mean, it's over the top. It's, you know, lots of gunplay and lots of over-the-top violence and things that he survives that, you know, no normal human being should survive, falls and all that stuff. But the hook is each one of them, you know, feels like its own movie. The first one deals with Nathan being an explorer trying to find where Sir Francis Drake's body was dropped off at sea, and they find the casket, which leads to him finding a notebook that details kind of this cryptic roundabout map to find El Dorado, the fabled city of gold. Well, it turns out that it's, you know, spoiler again, but it's not a city, but a giant building of gold. But through each of the stories, and I'm not going to hit on the plot points of each one, what the writing that really sticks to me, and you wouldn't think it would in a straight-up action shooter game, is the character interactions, because at no point during the game do you feel like, you know, you're just trying to progress from A to B to C. It feels like the character is written, so he's reacting to the crazy stuff that's going on around him. If bullets are flying, he's making comments on it, and he's interacting with, you know, the non-playable characters. And it's just, it makes the game feel so much more real for it. And, it, you know, it's still absurd, but you have a fleshed out feeling for all of the characters. And good writing, to me, has memorable set pieces, and there are memorable set pieces in each of these four games. There's a big battle on a U-boat in the middle of the Amazon jungle. There's in the first game. In the second game, there's this scene at the beginning of the game where you don't know what's going on. You wake up, and you're in the middle of a train that's halfway, you know, over a cliff in, like, the Himalayas, and you're trying to climb up the rail cars to the top of the train and escape, and you don't know what's going on. They have these action pieces that are so well written, and you know logically that the character's going to live, but there's so much tension packed into them, and it's just good writing to me that you're enjoying the hell out of it, even though you already know that you're going to live through it, you know, and that to me is good storytelling. And each of the games, kind of like Indiana Jones again, at least the first three, had an almost mysticism to it, you know, because in Indiana Jones, you had the Lost Ark, and you had the Cup of Christ, and then the, well, whatever was going on in the Temple of Doom with the shaman, but anyway. And Short Round. We can't forget Short Round. But anyway, in each of these games, you had this little set of mysticism, and they get explained through the game, like in the first one, there are these, because they touched the gold of El Dorado, they were turned into some kind of monster things. I don't really remember how to explain those, but in the second game, you're trying to find Shambhala and, you know, these mythical places. And there's these things that are infected. They're basically like yetis almost, affected by this stone that you're trying to find throughout the game. And I'm not hitting all the major characters or plot points, but it's just a game you have to experience yourself. And if nobody here's played it, and I know it's one of the newer games within our set of recommendations, it's such a fantastic story, and all of the characters feel alive and very well written. The love of Indiana Jones and me probably skews my vision on this, and I know it's not a masterpiece. It's not Shakespearean, you know, level storytelling by any stretch of the imagination, but the game knows what it is, and it tells a great story. And it's just like when you go see an action movie, you're in the mindset for that action movie, and if it's well written, it's all the better for it. Mad Max Fury Road.
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned Tomb Raider, and, you know, that I've played the new Tomb Raiders. They're good games, and the stories are certainly much more thought out than the original Tomb Raiders 20 years ago, but there's something that the charm isn't quite there as it is in Uncharted. And I don't know if it's because Lara Croft is a different kind of character. character, or if they intentionally made Tomb Raider much darker in the kind of like DC versus Marvel. But Uncharted really feels like the more happy, for lack of a better word, it's the happier, more fun game. You know, in Tomb Raider, you are grimy the whole time, and that's not the case in Uncharted.
I can agree with that, and, you know, typically I prefer a darker kind of story, and I'm a DC guy at heart. I feel that the comics are even darker than like, the movies are in tone, you know? Mm-hmm. But, and I played the first rebooted Tomb Raider on PS4, and I really enjoyed it. But
it's a good game!
It is a really good game, and Square Enix, they make fantastic graphics on whatever they touch, and Square did the graphics for that. Fantastic graphics. But, Uncharted just has a special place for me, and that's not to say it doesn't have some dark moments. I mean, people do die, there are some really dark themes, and there's some really nasty characters throughout, but you're right, it does have a lighter tone, more of an adventurous tone, again, kind of like Indiana Jones.
Thank you very much for Uncharted. That's our first nominee in the Best Series. And I know that both Rachel and Josh P. want to bring up one of the Final Fantasies. I don't know which one yet. So, Rachel, ladies first, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your Final Fantasy pick?
Much as I'm sure me and Josh P. would like to talk about multiple games in the Final Fantasy series, I chose one, and I chose Final Fantasy IV, which was released in the U.S. when it was initially released in 1991 for the SNES. It was called Final Fantasy II, just because they decided they were going to skip a couple of Japanese releases and give them different names. In this case, I wanted to talk about Final Fantasy IV because not only was it one of the... I know it was not maybe the first, but I know it was one of the first RPGs to ever have an actual story other than go to the castle, find the princess, find these crystals, you know, name your characters whatever you want. You actually had a main character with a background and a name, and you actually had to make decisions, and you had a party, and you would lose party members, and you'd get new party members. I think it's one of the better stories.
So what makes the characters of Final Fantasy IV stand out?
Well, it sounds really contrived now, only because, you know, it's been done a lot since 1991, but the main character, Cecil, has a redemption arc. Halfway through the story, he starts out as a Dark Knight, which is on the more evil side of things, and he starts to realize his powers aren't, his strength is not going to be good enough for him to save his girlfriend and make the kind of change he's looking to make in the story. So he actually goes on a redemption path, becomes a paladin halfway the story. So you've got that. You also have a character that betrays the party, which, of course, happens from time to time nowadays. But back in 1991, that was a huge deal. Also, because we're okay with spoilers, the person that you think is the big bad of the game, it turns out to A, not be the big bad, and B, be Cecil's brother. So this game threw a lot of plot twists at you. They didn't make them for the sake of having a plot twist. Now, I will go ahead and mention that it has been re-released over the years. Depending what version you play, it will have different ways that they've translated the game and, you know, extra little bonus features here and there. There's a version of the game later on that lets you put characters that have deceased back into your party. I think that's a little contrary to the way the game works, but if that's the way you want to play it most, that's totally fine with you. I think that was the first Final Fantasy game to really have a solid story, any story to be honest, and still holds up pretty well over time. If you do keep in mind that, yes, this game was made in 1990. Actually, I should also probably note that it was popular enough in Japan that they actually created something called Final Fantasy IV The After Years, which was a basically a sequel. It continued. I think it skipped ahead about 15 years, 17, I think about 15 years ahead of time. And the main character, Cecil, and his girlfriend, who's a party member, end up having a kid, and he's the sort of the new main character. Mixed reviews on whether or not that did any good. I will admit I have yet to play the sequel. I rebought the complete collection on the PlayStation Portable, which includes both with remastered graphics. So I do have it because I had to have the definitive version for my own collection.
Josh, which game did you pick out of the Final Fantasy opus?
I chose Final Fantasy VI, and I'll first start off by saying it has been a little while since I last played this game, but it is one of my favorite stories, and I'll have to go back and relive it next time I can get my hands on it for the Super Nintendo, which might, looking at how much it goes for on eBay these days, might be a while. Yeah, so things I like about Final Fantasy VI, the story is fantastic. The way you get to know all the characters is wonderful, how they interact with one another. But one of the things I really love about it is how it has one of the most perfect cold openings of any story I've ever had. The first thing you do is you just play as, it wouldn't be Square without Vix and Wedge in it somewhere. Play as Vix and Wedge and then some mysterious girl that they've kidnapped and brainwashed, and you're going and you go in to attack the Whelk, whatever that is. Man, the cold opening has been used so much ever since this game has come out. But really, once you actually start to learn the backstory, it gets even better. It takes place in a time of war where the Empire is harnessing the power of demigods known as Espers, and your goal is to lead the resistance to take over. And you have a wide variety of characters, and one thing that this Final Fantasy game was the first to do was that whereas previous Final Fantasy games you had your party members just come and go, Final Fantasy VI was the first one that allowed you to swap them out or form multiple teams of four to split up and search the area, which I thought was a great thing. And it carried through, of course, a lot in future Final Fantasy games and just future RPGs in general. As far as the characters go, I love the relationships they develop with one another, which is almost seemingly dependent on how often you put them together on the team, though not entirely. And I love how there is no real main character. The main character shifts from time to time over the story to whoever is the most appropriate character for that chapter. No, there is no clear protagonist such as like previous Final Fantasy games, or no clear set of protagonists. Everybody gets to be the main character at some point during the game, and I love that. Anybody else have thoughts on it?
I think you're absolutely right. Rachel, what do you think about Final Fantasy VI?
He hasn't spoiled anything yet, so I will only say that about halfway through the game is one of the biggest plot twists I have ever seen in a game, ever.
Are you referring to Kefka?
I'm referring to what happens in the middle of the game when all of a sudden you explore the world map a little bit different.
Yeah,
and
okay.
That is absolutely, I remember being in such freakout mode during halfway the game that I put in a blank VHS tape and started recording on my SNES on my television because I had to rewatch it later because we didn't have YouTube back in the day.
Right.
Dating yourself, Rachel.
I don't care.
My goodness, she's older than 10.
So I'm going to ask a bold question perhaps with Final Fantasy, mm-hmm. because whenever you hear Final Fantasy in more general terms, almost every article says that the best Final Fantasy story is Final Fantasy VII. But neither one of you chose Final Fantasy VII, so have you stabbed Aeris again?
Right in the spine.
Or do you think, and this is a whole other episode perhaps, but briefly, do you think 7 is slightly overrated, or do you just think 4 and 6 respectively deserve a little more praise than they typically get?
I think 4 and 6 deserve a little more praise than they get. However, I probably am not the fairest judge of that. I never had a PlayStation 1 growing up, so I've never played Final Fantasy VII.
Okay, as someone whose first Final Fantasy game was 7, I think every single Final Fantasy game before 7 is vastly underrated, and I think 7 was, it has become overrated. It was an excellent, fantastic, brilliant game, but the following from it has become just so over the top that it's out of proportion quality game.
I think, to coin a phrase, it might be the most popular cult classic, which is kind of an oxymoron in description, but it kind of feels that way.
I would say it doesn't need any more cheerleaders. It has plenty. And for a lot of people, back in 97, it was, I believe it was the first Final Fantasy game to ever be advertised on U.S. television. And I know that it had a lot of people, Final Fantasy VII, if you go on YouTube, look at the old Final Fantasy VII promos, they tried to make it act like it was a movie. I actually distinctly remember seeing a commercial for this when I was younger, and it was a lot of people's first Final Fantasy for various reasons, and yes, it was a big deal at the time, absolutely big deal. It is a good game, and I'm going to buy the remake when it comes out, but I think some of the other ones, I think some people think, oh, it only has the nostalgia value. It was only good if you played it in the 90s, but I think there are a lot of people who should at least give them a shot.
So I will go ahead and introduce my first pick, and it's not Final Fantasy, but I'm going to say one line, and I think you'll know where I'm going. War. War never changes.
Oh, Lord. We're going there.
Come along, Dogmeat. We're going to the wasteland. It's time for Fallout. Now, of course, Fallout is largely what you make of it. As with all the Bethesda games, it's you could spend hours and hours doing nothing with the main quest. And trust me, I have. And one of our panelists, who will remain nameless, when he played The Elder Scrolls, spent hours and hours collecting swords and doing nothing else. So we know how that goes. But with Fallout, I...
And apples.
And apples, yes.
Mine was potatoes.
Mine was cheese. We got a party, come on.
And in Fallout, it's a little bit different. So, first of all, me personally...
We've got a big potato at least.
As you well know, loyal listeners, I am much more of a sci-fi nerd than a fantasy nerd outright. So, Fallout's going to probably appeal to more anyway. And as a interesting fact, the very first game I ever played of a modern generation, with the exception of Wii games, was Fallout 3. So it holds a hugely special place in my gaming heart, and I would actually say Fallout 3 is the game that made me a quote-unquote gamer.
Whoa.
So I have to recommend it, and the story in Fallout... Now, I should say before I go into Fallout 3 specifics, the story in every Fallout is good. I actually am working through Fallout 4 right now, even though I've been playing it a while. I'm only one-third through the main quest because Bethesda. But Las Vegas, or New Vegas, sorry, is a fantastic story. It's more complex than Fallout 3. I really love the twists and turns of Caesar's Legion. I think that the developers of that game did a fantastic job creating nuance and more of a traditional RPG feel. But I'm going to stick with Fallout 3. It's what I know. It's what brought me to dance. Fallout 3's story, you start as a baby and you see your father in this vault, an underground vault, Vault 101. If you don't know the Fallout premise, what's happened is there has been a nuclear apocalypse in an alternate reality 2200s. And Fallout 3 is actually set under the ruins of D.C., Washington, D.C., called the Capital Wasteland. And you're taken from baby to teenage years to early adulthood, and you are tasked with going to find your father who has left the vault. In so doing, you get embroiled into a plot to give clean water to the Capital Wasteland, while at the same time, you can get involved with all the factions in the Capital Wasteland who are from ghouls that are zombies, from people who want to literally blow up a town with a nuclear bomb in it, and will give you a very nice penthouse if you do, to people who are in a sanctimonious brotherhood that they're the nice guys, but you still kind of hate them because they're sanctimonious. The detail that was put into the characters is amazing, and the memories are incredibly vivid. The twists and turns dealing with the father is really important. It's actually voiced by Liam Neeson, which is, you know, a nice addition. He makes the father character that much more important, filled with gravitas. And again, spoilers, the father does die about halfway through the game, and you have to continue his project. The best moment for me is actually the antagonist of the game is the Enclave, which considers itself to be carrying on American ideals. And in the whole game, you're hearing the president. This is your president. He's always on the radio chastising you for going against American values. And near the very end of the game, big spoiler alert, you find out that the president is, in fact, a computer program who has been running based off programming that is hundreds of years old, and only two or three people alive know that. I do have one big problem with Fallout 3, which they did fix with the first DLC, Broken Steel. In the original version of the game, you had to kill yourself in order to essentially win. You set up a situation kind of like Spock in Wrath of Khan, where you're going to have to radiate yourself and sacrifice yourself to save everyone else. Problem with that is most people by that point have got a companion called Fox, who is a super mutant. Super mutants are immune to radiation. So you are allowed in Fallout and encouraged to send your companions into situations where they are suited to fight. And previously, you have sent Fox into radiated environments to go loot and take care of the baddies. But you're not allowed to do that in Fallout in the ending because Fox says it's your player's destiny. That is BS. It's outsmarting Destiny, but Broken Steel did fix it, so it's pardonable. But the story itself is fantastic. I know I've used that word a lot, but it's worthy of praise. And like I said, it got me into gaming. That story, those mechanics, exploring it, a wonderful game. But Matt, you told me your first pick is the story overwhelms you, overwhelms your life. So what is this pick?
And as we've probably established by this point in Big Nerdy Questions history, my choices tend to be unconventional, if not borderline controversial. I have selected, Josh P is nodding. I see you. I have selected the Mass Effect trilogy. And go ahead and pause your listening until you're done howling in rage at me, and then resume. I will wait. Just put some smooth jazz in for a period. Okay, I'm assuming you've pressed play again at this point. Good. So, I subscribe to indoctrination theory. I loved the Mass Effect trilogy. I think one was the absolute master. It introduced the characters. It brought Garrus in, and he calibrated all the things. And for people who have not played Mass Effect before, I recommend playing as female for the protagonist. You can do pretty much all the same things. A couple of the love interests that are available change. But the voice actress who did female Shepard, I believe her name was like Jennifer Hale or something along those lines.
That's correct.
Her line delivery made it real. It took it from great to brilliant. The voice acting, especially with female Shepard, it's immersive. A lot of complaints came out with the ending of Mass Effect 3 because people felt like it didn't make sense or it was just poorly written. And shortly after it came out, someone came up with what's called the indoctrination theory. And what the indoctrination theory states is that almost the entirety of Mass Effect 3, Shepard is actually fighting off the indoctrination process from the Reapers. And it goes through to explain why some of the morality colors or conversational choices get switched in 3. There are some somewhat surreal odd points in the plot, like the dream sequences and the little boy who's not really there. And we can't forget about Marauder Shields. There's a Geth Marauder at the end of the game who has shields. So the internet has named him Marauder Shields because Marauder Shields died for your ending. But you have to make a choice at the end of three where you choose between control. Your choices are control, synthesis, or destroy. If you choose to destroy the Reapers, it's considered the quote unquote real ending. But if you choose control or synthesis, you'll see Shepard's eyes, and he's been indoctrinated. So that kind of backs up the theory that if you choose destroy, which is the ending I always choose, it's the only way you actually defeat the Reaper indoctrination. And if you run it back and look at the whole game through the eyes of you're trying to save the galaxy while resisting being indoctrinated by the Reapers, it goes from being a decent game with a really crappy ending to a masterwork. And I really think that when put together, the Mass Effect trilogy truly is a masterwork.
I think the characterization of Mass Effect is some of the best in a game. period. And Mass Effect 2, in some ways, is the video game equivalent of the Seven Samurai. Because you're bringing together these characters for a suicide mission, essentially, and all of them have such unique personalities, back interests, or backstories, similar to Final Fantasy, but I really love how they're meshed out in the Mass Effect series. Would you agree with that, Matt?
I would say so, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that Mass Effect is on the level of a Kurosawa work, but I'm not saying it's not.
Well, as you know, I've actually studied the works of Kurosawa because I'm weirdo. But yes, I would compare it to a Western modern version of Shichinin no Samurai. So yes.
Do you think that indoctrination theory is the only way to redeem Mass Effect 3?
No, I think it's a solid game, and I think a lot of the backlash against it came from people being angry that they didn't get the ending they expected. I think that's a big portion of it, is they didn't get the ending they expected. So instead of stopping to think about the game deeply, instead there was just a backlash. Because we're all members of the nerd community here, and I think I can safely say every single one of us has had an illogical, unreasonable, vitriolic reaction to at least something within one of our fans.
Absolutely.
Matt, I think you have a little bit too much of this you against the world mentality here. I don't see anything controversial about saying Mass Effect is a well-written video game story. It is. Now, I've only played the first one.
There will be people who disagree with me.
Of course. There are going to be people who disagree that Final Fantasy is well written.
They may come to both of us with torches and pitchforks.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I love the first Mass Effect. Some of the quotes and some of the moments in that game give me wisdom to live by in my real life. Right.
I think Mass Effect 1 had a beautifully executed story.
Yes.
Does Mass Effect have the best romance ops in a game?
I think they're a lot more.
Spoiler, big shock. I'm sorry, Vimship, Garrus, the shooting date on the Citadel, best date ever. You missed on purpose.
You do get a pretty nice bromance if you play a male, because Garrus is not bisexual. But alien biology notwithstanding. Yeah, I think I have to admit, I did not romance Garrus in my first playthrough. I have ever intended to do it my second playthrough, and then I just never got to a second playthrough, fortunately.
Has anyone ever actually saved Ashley?
Very few people.
Yes, I did.
I let
Caden burn.
I just... something about Ashley just makes me want to let her die. I think it might be because she's a xenophobic bitch.
The voice of Caden in Mass Effect is Raphael Sabarge, who plays Archie Hopper on Once Upon a Time. I think we've all done our first round, so let's do a breeze through of the second round. And Ed, what is your second pick?
My second pick would also be from the development team of Naughty Dog on the PlayStation 4, The Last of Us, which is probably the best survival horror game I have ever played in my entire life. It is so emotional. The game starts out, you're playing as this young girl. You don't really know what's going on, but the events start unfolding around the town. Your dad's not there. You catch snippets of things on the news. It's very zombie-esque. Things are starting to go south in a hurry downtown. And then you're playing as this girl, and your dad comes home, and basically things unravel rather quickly, and they have to leave the house. The infected, they're not technically zombies, but the infected start attacking the house, and they make a break for it. And through a series of events, the little girl and the dad and the brother all make it out and are going up an embankment, and some CDC guys or some military guys see them and start opening fire on them, and then the girl you've been playing as the entire time gets killed. You fast forward, society somewhat falls, and it's all survivors now, and then you're playing as the father. This is probably the most beautiful story of reclaiming emotion for a character, because you're playing as the father, Joel, the entire time. And you come across a girl named Ellie, who looks remarkably like Ellen Page, and there was actually a bit of controversy about that, because she looks and has the name of Ellie, but that's beside the point. And she has what this resistance group leads to believe is the cure to the outbreak of the infected, which it turns out that's some spores from plants that infect people and turn them into these monstrous cannibalistic things. Again, they're not zombies, but for all intents and purposes, zombies. And the entire story is them making their way west and trying to meet up with this resistance group so that they can, you know, what he believes to be culture a cure from her blood. And it's just this gripping story. You know, there's some harrowing moments with, you know, the standard jump scares that go with any horror game. But at the end of it, you find out that the resistance movement is not so much looking to find a cure in the best way, because they're going to kill her, go into her brain, and then try to harvest a cure that way. And anyway, you're given the choice. It's not really a choice, but within the narrative, you're given the choice to let them take the cure or damn humanity and save the girl. And the whole point of this was for him to reclaim his humanity and start caring about this girl. And he unleashes all hell on these people and rescues the girl. And that's kind of just a quick synopsis of the story, because I know we're probably running short on time. But great story.
Yeah, The Last of Us, well worth the playthrough. And I've seen articles that list The Last of Us as one of the best stories, period, of all gaming. So great pick. Rachel, I think you have a JRPG to recommend.
Yes, I will say I only can recommend two games out of the series, which is at this moment half in the U.S. market, and that would be Persona, which is a like a sort of a spin-off from the Shin Megami Tensei series overall. Particularly Persona 3 and 4. Now, Persona 3 was the first one I had ever played. And when I did play it, I played the PlayStation Portable version, which had a little extra bonus as having an entirely new perspective. In all of the Persona games, you play as a guy, and you are going throughout the game talking from a somewhat more male perspective. Your love interests are female. In Persona 3, you have the ability to play as a female and have male love interests. So I should probably give a brief overview of the game itself before I delve into perspective. Basically, the Persona series is about a character who actually goes to a new town, gets wrapped up into some weird stuff, and finds out that they have a persona, a sort of mystical, otherworldly being. We're not actually really sure what it is, but that's kind of part of the point, that they can which are based off some of the original demons from the Shin Megami Tensei series. And for example, the backdrop of Persona 3, which, in my opinion, was the better of the two, is a male character who gets starts school in a new town and finds out that there's this mysterious hour just before midnight called the Midnight Hour that only some people are aware of, and weird stuff is going on. Weird things are coming out and basically killing people while they're not aware of the Midnight Hour. And he and some of his dorm mates have the ability to summon personas to fight these evil things in the middle of the night. I think that the best part about plot is also kind of part of the gameplay, in that you bounce back and forth between dungeon crawling, the actual part of the story, and also the day-to-day daily school stuff. So some of the time you're dungeon crawling and getting into new areas, and the dungeons are randomized. So every time you go down on the 32nd floor of this giant tower you're climbing up, it'll be slightly different. So you're dungeon crawling, you're advancing the plot through, you know, the story, and then you're also balancing it out with spending the days at school as your character. So sometimes you'll have to get quizzed on something, sometimes you'll have to figure out what character do you want to eat lunch with, and that makes the bonds between the characters get stronger, which not only have gameplay issues, but also you know, let you learn more about those characters. The good side, the flip side to playing as a female, is you learn more about the male characters because they have bigger backstories, because you have a chance to romance them. And then the females, you get a different perspective on because you're no longer hitting on them. You're kind of like, you know, fembros or whatever the heck you want to call that. That works pretty well, too. So it's almost like part dating sim, part dungeon crawler, part JRPG, depending how you want to view it.
Thank you very much, Rachel. And Josh, I think you said you have a classic you want to introduce.
Well, yes. And at this point, it should be pretty apparent that I'm a fan of Square in the 90s. That being said, the best well-written story of all times, obviously, Super Mario RPG. No,
right?
Not that. No. Yeah. Bad. But I'm gonna talk about Chrono Trigger for a little while. I'm kind of surprised that we've gone this long without talking about it. You want to talk about getting to know the characters you're playing as and starting to feel what they feel? Definitely Chrono Trigger will satisfy that. You travel through space and time to try to stop the end of the world. Along the way, you pick up friends that you will be keeping for life in your journey. I've never seen a more diverse cast of characters. You have an adventurous kid and his inventive friend from the year 1000. Also, a curious girl who turns out to actually be the princess from that same era. They meet a frog from 400 years ago. They also meet a robot from the year 2300. And they get to go back in time, way back, and meet a prehistoric tribal chief from 65 million BC when dinosaurs and reptilian creatures of equal higher thought capacity ran the earth as well.
Hmm.
So a truly diverse cast of characters. The way that they get involved in trying to stop the end of the world is such a believable way. I say believable when we're talking about time travel, of course, but they seem to have no control over their time travel until they hit the year 20, until they hit the future. They meet the robot and they look into the computer to find out what happened to make this post-apocalyptic dystopian wasteland what it is today. And they see what happened in that one day in the year 1999, which was the near future. When the game came out, called the Day of Lavos, and from that point on, they swear that they are going to prevent that from happening. And it just trying to figure out what Lavos was, what he does, when he was created, who created him, all these questions just get answered in such a fantastic way over the course of the story. And the characters themselves, the way you really learn their backstories. And it's not like Final Fantasy VI where you get to play their backstories. You don't quite get to do that, but there's a lot more talking, a lot more dialogue, a lot more characters learning about one another. And by the end of it, you feel like you're one of them, and you feel like you've been friends with them all your life, too, which makes it that much better when, in one fateful moment, the main protagonist ends up sacrificing his own life to save the rest of the group. Certainly one of the moments that, that's probably still the only moment that has actually brought tears to my eyes while playing video games. So definitely Chrono Trigger is a good story. I'd like to hear if anybody else has played this one.
I have. I love that game.
And you said
I did
that
not
the
finish it.
Well, I was going to let everybody else jump in if they had played it. I mean, that is a absolute fantastic game, and I was a hook for me is, and again, this is aesthetic, the characters are designed by Akira Toriyama, the guy that did Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z. So I love anime, and I love the art style. The music in that game was done by one of the main orchestrators for Final Fantasy throughout the 90s, Nobuo Uematsu, and he, great orchestrator, great music. And then the story was so good, just back and forth, and then not to mention the game's combat system, where it was kind of a live, flowing combat system, and that's not even talking about the story, that's just the components of the game, but it was just great.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to disagree with Akira Toriyama.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, but everyone he draws has the exact same face.
But I love... Okay, alright.
He draws one face and just is like, okay, I'm just going to give this to everyone because I'm going to cut corners somewhere.
Okay, this is one of those nostalgia things, and honestly, this needs to be in like an anime episode of this, but Dragon Ball Z was one of my first favorite anime as a younger guy. And it holds a special place for me, and so, yes, I like the Akira Toriyama style. I mean, I'm still watching the new release Dragon Ball Z movies, and I'm 31 years old.
Okay, well, one the moment that I got hooked on Chrono Trigger happened in their first trip into the future, where Robo meets his brothers, quote unquote, and after being programmed to be good, he's so happy to see them and he wants to say hi to them, but they never say a word to him. They just punch him. And then they all keep punching him repeatedly, just beating the crap out of him, and they send him down the garbage chute. That was the first time I swore that I was going to get vengeance on them for destroying my buddy Robo. And I'll tell you something, the story didn't disappoint after that.
Yeah, the story of Robo is certainly much more fleshed out than the story of RoboCop.
Other favorite moments from Chrono Trigger include the scene where they're all sitting by the campfire and they fall asleep, but Luca decides to get back up, go through the portal, and go back in time to save her mom from the accident that left her crippled for life. And the story progresses whether you succeed or fail at it. So you have control over this, essentially this dream. Does it become a good dream, or is it you reliving the worst nightmare of your life? The time that you got your mom crippled and it was your fault.
Wow. That is deep. But speaking of deep storylines, would you kindly pay attention, because it's time for me to bring up BioShock. Now, I think some of us on the panel would probably say BioShock, is one of the best games ever made. I don't disagree, but would you kindly consider the possibility that the better story is in BioShock Infinite? Because that's what I would argue. Now, BioShock Infinite, I was so excited for the game, but I didn't get it when it was released. So what did I do? I watched the first 5 minutes of someone's playthrough on YouTube, and I got hooked. And a couple of days later, I realized that I've watched the whole game. So I actually experienced this story as a movie, as opposed to a game. But my God, what a story. It's so hard to explain what's going on, but essentially you have a man named Booker DeWitt, who's sort of a private investigator, going to this city in the clouds called Columbia to investigate something. We're not quite sure. And he is brought there. He goes to the royal residence. He sees the girls, who she called Elizabeth. And he realizes that Elizabeth's father, who is the ruler of Columbia, is a theocrat in a very American sense, which is an interesting twist on it. And there are so many plot twists, so many nuances. You've got time travel, alternate universes, multiple universes, the multiverse, everything. It always has a lighthouse. And the twist at the end, because I can't explain it fully without going through the whole plot, I'm not going to say what it is, because there's no way to adequately explain that moment. But it literally ends the game. It's the last thing that happens. You do not play it at anymore. You end on the twist. It's like Twilight Zone, but it hits you even harder because you've been building to it for hours and hours, especially if you played all the side quests. Well, not really side quests in BioShock, but all if you've explored everything in as much detail as you would want. And it connects into the first BioShock with an appearance from Rapture. It has the same sort of philosophies as in the first and second BioShock. And I'm not saying BioShock 1 and 2 aren't amazing games with amazing stories. They are. The BioShock Infinite story still blows my mind 3 years later. And I'm pretty sure I have a pretty good understanding of it, but that's only because I took 3 years of advanced physics. otherwise, maybe not. But it's worth it. It is worth it. What a story. What a game. And Ed, I think you're a BioShock fan too, right?
Oh, big time, and I'll agree with you that to me, and I haven't played the second one, so I can't really speak to that, but of the first and third one, I like BioShock Infinite better as well, and, just like you were saying, it's hard to go into this without, you know, just describing the entire story, but it gave me chills when Elizabeth said that line, there's always a man, a lighthouse, and a city. I mean, and it had the most surreal ending I have ever played in a video game.
Ever. You will ever play.
It dropped my jaw. And it was, and that is good storytelling. And this is the same year that The Last of Us came out. Both of those games came out a couple months apart. So that was a really, really good year for video game storytelling for me. It was just Booker's such a great character. Elizabeth's a great character. Fantastic game.
I'm going to say this, and it's a really strong statement, especially, Matt, you will know how strong this statement is. The twist at the end of Bioshock Infinite is my personal version of Darth Vader's I am your father moment. Because I knew that twist before I saw Empire. It's that level of a twist. That much of a change.
I've heard that before. You're not the first person.
It is that, like, that is my, when I think of twists that change everything, that will live on forever, this is it. This is my Darth Vader twist. So, yeah, I can't recommend it enough. So, Matt, we have one last game, and you said it involves the weather? I'm not sure what you meant by that.
That's right. It's heavy breathing. No, wait, that's not right.
It's Doug?
Heavy rain.
It's Doug.
Heavy rain. Oh,
okay.
So, this is probably going to be the single shortest segment that we're going to have on this episode by quite a bit, because I'm going to give away almost nothing about this game. The creators of the game actually said it was explicitly designed to only be played once. They do not want you to play it again, even though it has replay value. And the reason is because they designed it to feel like a movie. The entire goal of the game is to feel like you're in charge of it as it's happening. And it is dark.
It's a mystery, correct? I mean, that's
yes.
Not saying much, yeah.
It is a mystery game. And what it is you play a man who is prone to losing time. Basically, he's prone to occasional bouts of anterograde amnesia, in which, basically, there are points of time where you don't form memories. So, he will black out, and he'll lose up to a week of time.
Wow.
And at the very beginning of game, you are playing as the father, you are at the store with your son, you lose time, and your son is gone.
That's a hell of a setup.
And that is the premise of the game, is trying to find out what happened to your son, get him back. You do relatively quickly discover that he was kidnapped, and that the person who kidnapped is going to kill him unless you do a series of tasks. And every time you do a task, you get a clue, and once you have been offered all of the tasks, you can refuse to do them, by the way. Once you are at the end of the last task, put the clues together to try and put them in your car's GPS to go to where you think he is. And I'm leaving it at that.
Wow. Yeah, thank you. We're going to have to go play that now. So,
one thing I would like to do at the end of the episode here, just really quickly, is to go around the panel and have each of us say the name and system of the game got us hooked on gaming. No explanation, just the name and the system.
Hooked, not started.
The one that got you hooked on gaming.
Okay. Well, I'll go first, since I kind of said it earlier. Fallout 3 PC.
Okay. Josh P.
Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo.
Ed.
I'm really dating myself here. Super Mario Brothers for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Rachel.
This is even worse. Maybe. I think the first one I ever got really hooked on, really into it, was Legacy of the Wizard NES.
Hmm.
Crap. I think I might be the oldest person here. That explains why my beard's white.
He's full of crap. Viewer.
Dragonfire for the Intellivision.
Awesome. Oh, buddy.
I do have to also
the
say...
The game that brought me in was Dragonfire, and it was on an Intellivision.
I have, like, two phases of gaming. My childhood gaming, the most influential game that got me really hooked on gaming was Spyro the Dragon on the PlayStation. Just putting that out there. As an alternate, but wow, in television. That explains why you yep. cosplay as Gandalf every time.
No, he wishes.
That beard's real, baby. not really, I can't facial.
None shall pass.
I tried, I look.
So, you know, now that we're at the conclusion, I think it's fair. Normally we would have our overall choice, but we've all played such different games. I don't think it's fair to choose one pick tonight. Is that agreed?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, so
I wouldn't, yeah.
All 10 of these games are amazing, obviously, or we wouldn't recommend them. Most of them are RPGs or have elements of RPGs. So what does that tell you about that genre? What does that tell you about us? Maybe we can revisit that later. And of course, there are a lot of games that we didn't get to that I know are really popular for their stories. The Walking Dead Telltale series, the Arkham series, Arkham Asylum particularly. We didn't get to that one. There are a God of War series, Shadow of the Colossus, So
I would even mention the Guild Wars series.
Guild Wars.
I know it's an MMO, but it's got a great story.
You know, Warcraft and Starcraft have good stories. And we didn't get to those. Mortal Kombat may be something that you consider to have a decent story if you like the over-the-top soap opera kind of a story.
To be fair, the newer Mortal Kombats actually have good storylines, like 9 and 10.
They do. That's what I was thinking.
I was thinking the Mortal Kombat movie.
We have an excuse to do the Mortal Kombat song.
Continue.
So obviously there's a lot more choices. So listeners, if you have a game that you want to introduce as the best story, please send it to us at BNQ Podcast on Twitter or bnqback@gmail.com or bignerdyquestions@gmail.com. If you send us a paragraph about the game, we will read it on the air in a follow-up episode because we love you and we want to share your thoughts. The beautiful thing with gaming is everyone has had different games they played because games are so much of a time commitment now, so we all can bring different new recommendations to the party, and hopefully something you had heard tonight, something you haven't played that you are now going to play. So we have 10 great games, and plus 11, Space Engineers, best story of the whole bunch that we started the whole episode off with. But I want to thank the panel. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh P.
Always a pleasure to be here, Josh.
Thank you, Rachel.
Yay.
And Matt, I'm going to thank you, but first you have to kill somebody, don't you?
There is one last order of business to hand. You see, Jar Jar Binks has to die.
Oh, yeah.
And today, Josh, Jar Jar Binks decided that he was going to visit the world of Final Fantasy. Upon his arrival, he was immediately speared off the side of the airship Enterprise by Kane Hywind.
I'm totally fine with that.
No, can I, as a follow-up, isn't there a Final Fantasy character named Sin, the giant whale?
Not really.
Oh. Well, I was going to say that Jar Jar fell off the airship and landed in Sin's blowhole.
Oh.
That's a different game, though.
Wasn't Sin,
that sounded kind of dirty.
Wasn't Sin kind of just an amorphous blob or something?
I can explain it, but that would be spoilers.
Yeah, okay. So sorry about that, guys.
This episode is brought to you by spoilers.
Yes, it is.
But so Jar Jar is dead. Once again, thank you, Matt, for doing what we all have to do. Thank you again, panel. Once again, this is Josh Hager signing off for BNQ this week. We will see you next time.